Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and I want to extend a warm welcome to everyone who is joining us here this week with Dr. T. Each week, we get together with really amazing guests and have conversations about timely topics that I think are of great interest and things that you want to hear. After the interview, this will be hosted here at Cloud Hub, and it will also be at the Tenpenny Files, where you can find the direct link by going to drtenpenny.com. So before we introduce our guest for today, let me just say a word about our podcast sponsor, which is Mike Lindell of MyPillow.com. You know, I met Mike Lindell multiple times at various events where I've spoken. He's the real deal. He's doing his best to save not only the country, but a lot of different things around the world. And he's been deplatformed by the cancel culture off of all of the platforms, all of the big box stores and everything, to where this is really affecting his business, which he's doing great things for Americans as we're heading into the Christmas season. So many of us who have sizable followings have stepped up to the plate, and it's a mutually beneficial relationship between our organizations and Mike Lindell and MyPillow.com. They have great products over there at their store. If you're not really in the market to buying a pillow, which you should be, if you don't have one of these amazing pillows, I actually have two of them, and I actually am a consumer. I have the sheets, I have the towels, I have the slippers, and I have the bathrobe. And everything that he says is good, it really, really is. I really especially love the towels. So if you go over there and it's Christmas time, and you want to buy gifts for people around the world, they can have them shipped to various places, go to MyPillow.com and use our affiliate code, which is DRT, Dr. T, and that will get you some great discounts and some great prices. And I'm sure that your friends and family this holiday season will really enjoy the gifts that you get them. So if you go to MyPillow.com, our affiliate code is Dr. T, DRT. We'd appreciate you using our code, and I know that Mike will appreciate your business. So with that, let me introduce today's guest, Dr. Daniel Nagase. Dr. Daniel Nagase graduated from Dalhousie Medical School in 2004 and did his, I think that's his medical degree at McGill University in Quebec in 1999. He's been an ER doc for more than 10 years in British Columbia and Alberta, Canada. He has recently risen to the attention of both alternative and mainstream media by exposing the connection between COVID shots and the steep rise in stillbirths across Canada in mothers who've had this injection. He's also been a very vocal about the connection between the shots and the rapid rise in cancer. You know, here at This Week with Dr. T, we did previous interviews with Dr. Charles Hoff and Dr. Patrick Phillips, who are also ER doctors in various parts of Canada. Just like with Dr. Nagase, they are emergency medicine physicians, and they've been outspoken about the things that are happening with these COVID shots. And mainstream media and the health officials are after them for refusing to remain silent while watching their patients be harmed. You can find both of those previous interviews on This Week with Dr. T here on this channel, and you can find the very personal deep dives I've done with them at Dr. T for our premium members, which are recorded at the Tenpenny Files. Daniel, thank you for getting up so early this morning to have this conversation with us. You're way out there on the West Coast, and it sounds like we talked just a few minutes before we started the recording about some interesting things that happened just in the last day or two in your life by actually saying that you're standing up for your patients. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what's going on out there in Western Canada?
Well, it's hard to say what's going on in Western Canada, but it's the tyranny is being ratcheted up a notch over the past week. A good friend of mine, the actual doctor who discovered the story of the 13 stillbirths at Women and Children's Hospital in Vancouver, he was taken away by police in handcuffs and forcibly taken to the emergency department for a mental health assessment. And this is completely out of the blue. I was actually at his house doing an interview with the Western Standard Online. That's an Alberta news organization. And by the time I was done my interview, Mel was gone. So I actually called the emergency department to find out what was going on. And over the next couple hours, the emergency doctor, informed Mel that he was going to be withheld in the hospital as an involuntary patient. So basically, you're in jail. And the alleged mental health diagnosis was frontal lobe dementia. Now, I've worked as an emergency doctor my whole career. I would never admit any patient for dementia unless they were having problems like they were wandering out into the street, they were walking around naked in the snow, or obvious harm to themselves. So this is completely, completely non-standard practice to have someone in Canada. We call it a form. So it's a form that the emergency doctor signs that takes away all your rights for 48 hours. And the thing is, in order for that form to be filled out, somebody has to be either danger to themselves or a danger to others, or if they were to leave the hospital, they would undergo a severe medical deterioration. Those are the only three reasons to sign a form. Normally, if someone is confused or not feeling quite right, or maybe hallucinating, we try and find the reasons behind the hallucination. Was there a poisoning? Was there a toxic exposure? And once the patient is resolved, standard practice is you call the patient's friends or family and say, hey, can you please take your loved one from the emergency department? You know, we were able to resolve XYZ, but if there's underlying dementia, please follow up with your family doctor or a psychiatrist as necessary. It is absolutely unheard of to take up a hospital bed on an acute psychiatric ward because someone has a suspected frontal lobe dementia. And I can attest to you, because I was with Dr. Mel Bruchet, you know, the entire week before. There is no signs of frontal lobe dementia. He's sharp, he's witty, he's got a better sense of humor than I do, and he's perfectly capable of driving. He was my driver when we did a tour of the interior a couple weeks ago. So we're still in the process of trying to figure out who called the police and made up a story convincing enough that the police would send three squad cars to his house to drag an 80-year-old man out of his house in handcuffs. This is completely unheard of.
What do you think is really behind this? Why have they done this?
You know, if I were to speculate, I think there's a really strong motivation to try and discredit Dr. Mel Bruchet. And, you know, given his age, he's just over the age of 80. Somebody somewhere might have decided, well, why don't we try and paint the picture that Dr. Mel Bruchet is just crazy old grandpa. You don't have to believe anything he says. He makes up stories. He confabulates, which is absolutely not the case. He worked as a family doctor for 50 years. He did everything, emergency deliveries, back when family doctors did practically everything. And he did that for almost 50 years at Lionsgate Hospital. And all of a sudden, 2 years into retirement, he's got dementia. That's unheard of, right? And so it was, I came back from Vancouver Island, where I was doing a number of speaking tours. And we got to Lionsgate Hospital, a registered nurse and I, and we tried to get to speak to the psychiatrist on call. And admittedly, we got to the hospital where Dr. Mel Bruchet was being held a bit late at 10 o'clock at night. But the registered nurses on the floor, when we called them, refused to let us talk to the psychiatrist on call. And we had both talked to Dr. Mel Bruchet earlier in the day, when the patients have their phone privileges. The patients aren't allowed to keep their cell phones on the floor of the psych ward. So again, this is exactly like a prison. And so guess what happened? We had the police called on us for trying to speak to the psychiatrist on call. And the registered nurse insisted that we were not to speak to the psychiatrist on call at 10 o'clock at night. And I work on call all the time. And I get paid to work on call, right? And the psychiatrist, it actually doesn't matter what time of day it is. If there's an urgent matter, like wrongfully detaining someone against their will, the patient advocate, which was me, has a right to talk to the psychiatrist on call who makes these decisions. But of course, the nurse dug her heels in, called hospital security. Hospital security called. So there were six police officers there for a petite registered nurse, Svetlana, and myself. And the officers tried to push us that this was an inappropriate time to be demanding to talk to the psychiatrist. And I said, no, that's absolutely wrong. You know nothing of the medical system. You don't get to declare when what is and is not inappropriate, an inappropriate time to be asking to speak to the doctor on call. The doctor on call, the psychiatrist on call, makes more than any of you officers. He's currently making more money than I am just being on call, right? And as taxpayers, we're all paying for him to be on call. This is every right, we have every right to speak to him. And so finally, after about half an hour of haranguing, the registered nurse finally gets the psychiatrist on call on the phone. And, you know, I speak to the psychiatrist on call. He denies knowing what the specific diagnosis is for Dr. Bruchet. I managed to impress upon the psychiatrist enough that he should be doing his job more diligently, rounding on the patients, being aware of the patients, and that Dr. Mel Bruchet has no place being occupying a hospital psychiatric bed in an involuntary status, because there is no diagnosis that would warrant him being held in hospital because he's a danger to himself or others. So that's where it was left the night before. And then the next day, Dr. Bruchet got to leave on an 8-hour day pass. So we did see Dr. Bruchet in person. We had a large rally in front of the hospital. There's, I'd say, maybe about 450 people.
That's out awesome. In the city,
and it was rain and sleet, and we still had a huge turnout. Dr. Mel Bruchet, he spoke to the crowd, and it's plain as day. Everyone could see. There's nothing demented about him. There's no dementia. There's no problem with cognitive function. He's sharp as ever, witty as ever. You know, he got the crowd laughing with his jokes, and yeah, that's the state of Canadian healthcare. The Mental Health Act, which was meant to protect people with mental health issues, is being used as a tool to imprison people wrongfully.
And he has been speaking out, as you have been, mm-hmm. about the large number of stillbirths that are being reported in women mm-hmm. who have had the COVID shot. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. And he's been speaking at these rallies with you. So they're using a bill, it's called the Mental Health Act in Canada, in order to try to silence him. And like you said, make him sound like he's a demented old man and really is crazy, and so he can't really be trusted. Is that correct? Oh dear, did I lose you? Well, there you are. Dr. Daniel, are you there?
All right. I can hear you. Your voice is coming through somewhat broken. Isn't that interesting, though? You start mentioning the Mental Health Act, and then all of a sudden, the audio, which was fine, gets interrupted.
Yeah, really interesting. My internet is now down so completely. So let's just keep talking, see if we can continue talking this. Let me see. So what did, tell us while we still seem to have this connection here, what have you found about these stillborns in Canada, and what led you to those conclusions? How did you start talking about this? Who were the whistleblowers, and how did you get involved with that? Are you still there?
Hello? Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, now I can hear you.
Okay, it says recording in progress, so I'm assuming we're still on the same recording. That was really weird. Like you said, as soon as I ask you about the, it says my internet is unstable. There's no reason for that. I've got really high quality internet here, and it says it's on my end, not on your end. So that's interesting. So let's go back to what I was saying. How did you start finding out about these stillbirths in these women who had received the COVID shots?
Well, Dr. Bruchet was hosting a gathering at his house for healthcare providers, and you know he's been hosting rallies regularly. So he had an appreciation dinner event for all the volunteers who've been coming to his rallies regularly. And three doulas from Women and Children's Hospital attended this event. And they told Mel that there was a day at Women's and Children's Hospital in Vancouver where they had 13 stillbirths in a 24-hour period. And that is practically unheard of.
So of all these women that have had these stillbirths, you know, this is sort of a curiosity to me because I've been seeing this periodically across the internet. We've also been seeing birth defects. We've seen babies that are born alive and then die from while they're breastfeeding, they start having ITP and, you know, bleeding diathesis, or they start having clots. We know that a lot of these babies that have been born have clots in the placenta. So part of the is a deoxygenation thing that's happening. Has anybody spoken to the mothers? Has anybody spoken to the mothers of this of these babies and seen, have they made the connection, or are they just being oblivious about it?
You know, we haven't had any confirmation yet from Women and Children's Hospital. That hospital is the main birthing hospital for the city of Vancouver, and they've denied that this ever happened. And I suspect the doulas who initially reported this to Dr. Mel Bruchet, they've been put under some kind of pressure because they haven't spoken to the matter since. So I don't know how we're going to be able to if any of the mothers are listening, who have experienced this, they want to contact me or Dr. Mel Bruchet. I think that's probably the preferable method. But as far as the Vancouver Coastal Health Authority goes, which is the regional health health department, there's been absolute silence and stonewalling as far as the actual mortality, miscarriage, and stillbirth statistics. But on the bright side, the story has become viral enough that it's given credence to stories where we have better confirmation, such as in Waterloo, Ontario, where a former provincial prosecutor went public with the information she received that there was 86 stillbirths in a 6-month period in a city that's maybe a quarter the size of Vancouver, so a city much smaller. So again, 86 stillbirths in 6 months is completely unheard of for a small city, and that has become a significant enough story that a member of parliament, a provincial member of parliament, one of the politicians, so the equivalent in Canada, in the equivalent in the U.S. would be a state politician, spoke to the matter in the provincial legislature. So, you know, this story in Canada is finally getting some steam, and the efforts by, you know, administrators to block this story or to discredit this story are gradually falling apart.
Well, I have seen several links from Instagram. One was a woman who was probably 8 or 9 months pregnant and was advocating for everyone to get the shot, because you don't want to get sick when you're pregnant. And then later, then there was a couple of more things. And then there was a third or a fourth screenshot where she said she was crying. And she said, "So here I am now. I was advocating for the shot. And now I'm in the hospital and getting ready to deliver a dead baby." And so this is just, you know, it's, you know, I've been speaking out, as you know, about this for the last 18 months. Very loudly. I've done probably real close to about 600 interviews. And just came back from San Diego kind of late last night, speaking out there at a conference. And this is really, it's a concept called democide. You know, genocide is when you kill a particular population of people, like Blacks or American Indians or something. And democide is a government using its authority to kill people for the sake of killing them. And this is what we're doing with these shots. I mean, we've got, you know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people across Canada, the U.S. and across Europe who have been killed from these shots. I mean, I got a report yesterday from the American Pilots Association of 101 dead pilots in 2021. And they had, it was from this log that they had, it was like in memorandum, in memorial of these pilots. And in 2020, there was, or 2019, there was like three deaths. In 2020, there was maybe six deaths. And in 2021, there were 101. And so it's, you know, is that trying to tell us something? We now have on record more than 300 professional athletes across the world in various sports who have died after getting these shots. It's beyond me, Dr. Nagase, how they have been able to bamboozle people into being so afraid. I posted on my Telegram page yesterday, it was an article that said, warning, officials say that more than 75,000 deaths are going to occur from the new variants, you know, the Omicron variant. And then the article right after it was from the World Health Organization that says there's not been a single death reported worldwide yet. And it seems as though this variant is very mild. And so the dichotomy of that, but yet the people who are running out to get these shots. I mean, it was amazing when I was in California, how many people you know, were telling stories about they just got their new booster. And yet there's people that are dying and almost a million people that we know of that have been maimed by these shots. How do you, why do you think it is that people, do they just not know? Are they just still not hearing the message? Or are they just somehow hypnotized into the message that they're still doing it? What is your take on that as a physician?
Well, you know, I think there's a certain demographic that doesn't know because they only follow certain mainstream news organizations, which have been fake news for two decades. You know, even since before 9/11, there's big news networks piped into every airport. CNN is probably the biggest one that publishes false stories all the time. It's their raison d'être. So that's the one aspect of it. But now the deaths, the side effects are becoming so apparent that it's harder and harder for people to claim ignorance about how dangerous, how deadly these injections are. And, you know, the couple times that I have encountered situations where people are very resistant, it's a sense of denial. It's there's no way that they could have been wrong about the shots because they bought the narrative so completely when the hype was about how these injections were going to stop this COVID pandemic. And that resistance to taking back your words from before, you know, going back and saying, you know what, maybe I was wrong about that, this isn't a good thing. That kind of entrenched stubbornness leads to a very hard and brittle, no flexibility, no desire to think things through, and they'd rather continue on the path that they already chose as opposed to reconsidering.
Are there any physicians that are standing by your side out there in the Vancouver area? Are they all saying that you're crazy and that your equivalent of your state medical board should take your license away?
You know, it seems to me, from various patients I talk to, there's still a majority of physicians that are very entrenched in the narrative that these injections are somehow beneficial. And I don't know if, well, I suspect that's because they have been pushing the injections on their patients so much that it would be a real embarrassment to say they were completely wrong about it. So they'd rather continue on the path that they were never wrong, even though it's starting to dawn on them that they were wrong. Yeah,
that's
such a sad state of affairs.
It is such a sad state of affairs. It's just so, like, you can't hardly get your head around it. It's like, I've been hitting you with a hammer and hurting you, and somebody's finally told me that I shouldn't do that, but I'm going to keep doing it anyways because it's what I've always been doing. I'm going to keep hitting you in the head with a hammer. You know, it's that level of illogic. And you know, now that people, you know, they'll say, well, look at all the people that are being tested positive and all the people that are in the hospital. You know, here in the U.S., there was a document that came out a few weeks ago that said that a Department of Defense document that said upwards to 63% of patients that were hospitalized were fully vaccinated. Are you seeing similar numbers to that in Canada, that the fully vaccinated are the ones that are sick and are being admitted to the hospital?
You know, I haven't been in a hospital since September the 12th, so I've basically been banned from work, so I couldn't speak to the statistics. And lately, at least in the province where I am, which is British Columbia, they've stopped releasing the statistics and the breakdown.
Wow.
How many percent who are currently in the hospital are vaccinated versus unvaccinated.
They've
collecting that statistic.
They banned you from work since September?
Yeah, since September the 12th. So September the 12th, when my shift was prematurely ended and they had another doctor come in to replace me. Since then, after that point, all the shifts I had scheduled for the rest of the year were removed. And anytime I try to pick up a new shift, that it's denied. So.
Oh, my.
And that's across the entire province of Alberta.
Oh, my goodness. So what are you doing with yourself in the meantime?
Well, now my mission is to speak out about the dangers of this injection. And really, on top of that, is to start holding people to account. Because just from the cell biology, molecular biology theory of these injections, they never should have been tried on people, right? The genetic risks are just so extreme with injecting genetic material into the body. You know, there's immense risks. You are changing the genetic makeup of victims who are getting these injections. So how it is that so many scientists, basic scientists, molecular biologists, cell biologists, immunologists, have been silent even before this injection came out, when they were talking about, you know, mRNA technology. How come even undergraduate level, you don't even need to be that advanced in cell biology knowledge to know what an extreme danger this type of technology has in terms of cancer, development, and, you know, unexpected side effects like blood clots.
And now what do you think about what they're doing to children? I mean, the statistics in the U.S. are already going through the moon. That we've already had over 400 and some dead children. And the VAERS report, the one that I was reading last night, let me just read this to you just really quickly, because the headline is baby fully vaccinated dies after being born. Baby of a fully vaccinated mom dies after birth from bleeding from the nose. And this was a VAERS report. And when you go down, it's VAERS report number 187-9991, the death following transplacental exposure from the messenger RNA vaccine. The infant is one of 52 reported deaths among 30,500 adverse events recorded by the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System for VAERS for children under 17 years of age by December 3rd. And we just started this, I believe, in September. So in about 4 months, there have been 30,550 adverse events filed in children and 52 reported infant deaths. I mean, to me, it's just, and we know that the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System here in the U.S., it's about somewhere between 1 in 10% of actual numbers. So does that mean there's over 300,000 adverse events already and over 520 deaths already from these shots? And yet parents seem to be just gleefully taking their children to be injected with these shots. And doctors seem to be like pushing it, and school administrators and government. I mean, it's like I almost can't even read it. It's just so despicable to me.
You know, I was in Kelowna. That's about a mid-sized city in the interior of BC. And myself and the son of one of the chiefs of the First Nations in the area, we actually went to one of the child vaccination clinics in Kelowna just to stand outside, speak to parents, try and start a conversation. And within minutes of us getting there, the police were called. But, you know, we explained ourselves to the police, you know, and what the situation was, and they were quite reasonable. They said, you know, as long as you're not trying to go inside the building and you're standing on the public sidewalk outside and you're not blocking anyone going in, you're perfectly entitled to talk to people. And so that's what we continued to do for the next hour. And it was so sad. We'd see parents, you know, marching their kids in, and, you know, I try and start a conversation with, "Hi, I'm Dr. Nagasi. Are you taking your child in to get the injection?" And they're like, "Oh, yeah, I am." And I said, "Well, you know, have you considered the risks, especially the risks of cancer, which won't be known for years with this type of injection?" And they say, "No, we never considered the risks of cancer." And then they would just continue and go on in, right? And it was just this, the parents would refuse to even consider, right? And the kids would be curious. The kids would be, "Mommy, what's cancer?" Right? And it was just absolutely heartbreaking. And, you know, it was, I remember one particular family, again, tried to start a conversation just about cancer risks with an injection, a new treatment that's never existed before in human history. And, you know, the mom marched the kid right into the facility. And then the dad actually doubled back to scream in my face that he knows all about cancer. And I said, "Well, because his daughter already had cancer." And I said, "Sir, that's probably the most important reason you should be reconsidering getting the injection." And this father looked like he was about to deck me if it wasn't for the fact that the police were still standing behind me, because they had been called earlier that day. So they were just there to keep the peace, right? And I guess they had nothing else to do, so they were just standing around. But yeah, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I don't want to say ignorance. It's more than ignorance. It's the willful blindness to just simple, rational thought. Like the parents that were marching their kids into this injection center, it's like they had dead eyes, right? The light of reason was gone. That's the only way I can describe it.
And chances are the parents were probably vaccinated too. And now they wanted to get their child vaccinated. And so the light is gone from being injected with a genetic modification technology that's actually destroying our genetics and taking the God out of our genes and the God out of our lives, you know? I want to read just really briefly, just for the people who are listening to this and will listen to it in the future. These are parts of two more VAERS reports. This is about another nursing newborn that the mother received the second dose of Pfizer within days of after the baby was born. Within 24 hours of the second shot, while she was nursing, the baby experienced a significant drop in heart rate, low oxygen in the blood, causing him to turn blue. He developed difficulty sucking and swallowing. An ultrasound was done of his head and revealed brain blood clots. This is a newborn infant that was breastfeeding that the messenger RNA was obviously transmitted from the mother through the breast milk into the baby and caused the baby to have blood clots in the brain. The second report was a five-year-old girl who had some underlying health condition but was doing well. She received the Pfizer vaccine on November the 18th, was monitored in the hospital, discharged a day later. That night, the father found her pulseless and not breathing. She died 3 days after the shot. I mean, and these reports just go on and on and on. Like I said, these are 52 reports of deaths with just in the last 3 months. And these are the only ones that are reported to VAERS. I mean, to me, it's child sacrifice. It's actually, you know, I've been working on this book I'm writing. It's called, the working title is Choose This Day Whom You Shall Serve. And it's, are you going to serve God, or are you going to are you going to bow your knee to the pharmaceutical industry? And it's really, you know, Jesus said before his return, that the times will be as in the days of Noah. And part of what was happening in the days of Noah was child sacrifice. You know, that was being part of the Babylonian society and part of what was happening in worshiping Moloch and Baal. And it was all about child sacrifice. And we now are seeing it in our face on a day-to-day basis. Parents literally taking their children in to be injected as part of an unwitting, unknowing, they don't even know that they're sacrificing their child to the pharmaceutical industry.
And how do pediatricians not see this? How do obstetricians not see this? You know, I've done a number of deliveries in my time, and I just can't imagine how awful it must feel to deliver a baby and to basically have a code pink, you know, neonatal rhesus, because the baby is pouring blood out of its nostrils. It's unbelievable. Like, how could the obstetrician who sees that, the pediatrician who sees that, not be, you know, screaming from the roofs, this is deadly, stop it now, right? It's so unbelievable that prior to this incident in history from 2020 to 2021, if there's any new substance introduced into the human species, whether it's a new drug, it's a new pesticide, whatever it is, every single side effect is automatically due to that new substance until proven otherwise. If somebody is taking a new injection that has never occurred before, every single person who has a heart attack in that group that's trying the new drug, is that heart attack is automatically caused by this new substance until proven otherwise, until there's enough data to say the heart attack rate after taking this new substance is exactly the same as the heart attack rate from people who don't take the substance. The stroke rate from people who take this new substance is exactly the same as the stroke rate from when people didn't take the substance. This is standard scientific practice, and that has all gone out the window. I hear over and over again, and it makes me furious, doctors, family doctors, specialists saying, oh, this side effect has nothing to do with the injection. Nothing to do with the injection. Like, you don't know that. It takes years of data to say this is due to the injection or unlikely to be due to the injection. And yet you have these specialists, these people who've done, you know, nearly a decade of extra training to be a subspecialist, and they are all confabulating propaganda. They are telling their patients absolute lies. And it makes me furious that this is occurring, that people who I would hope they were rational and reasonable people and scientifically minded and reason-minded people, especially to get to a station in life where they're a subspecialty consultant, would this basic error of logic would dawn on them. But it doesn't. This is satanical. Like the amount of mind control, the dishonesty, the denial.
Over an injection that is not only experimental, never been proven, but is completely unnecessary. I mean, completely unnecessary. And what you just said is so chilling. I mean, how many stillbirths, dead babies, do obstetricians have to deliver? And if they bother to even palpate the umbilical cord and find it full of clots, mm-hmm. how many of those have to occur before they go, wow, I wonder what's causing that? Mm-hmm. And they don't. It's just like life goes on, dead baby, oh well, next. Mm-hmm. And parents are doing the same thing. Oh, dead baby, oh well, next. You know, when I first heard that they were going to start injecting 5-year-olds, I said, mm-hmm. Well, maybe a couple million dead first graders will get people's attention. Mm-hmm. And my good friend and colleague, Dr. Larry Pilevsky, who is a pediatrician, a holistic pediatrician and we do a webinar on Thursday nights called Critically Thinking. He said, it's not going to make a bit of difference, Sherry. He said, we had hundreds of thousands of autistic kids after the shots and nobody, mm-hmm. everybody's still vaccinating their kids. You know, we've got, almost a million injured adults. People are still getting their shots. He said, mm-hmm. You know, even if we have, 10,000 this time of year at Christmas time, instead of having a Christmas party, we're having funerals of dead children. Nobody's going to care. Nobody's going to connect the dots because they are just comatose. They don't make mm-hmm. the connection, which is mm-hmm. so sad. It's just so sad. I mean, what is happening is the decimation of the human race, and you're absolutely right. It's absolutely satanic. It's the worst form of evil. I'm so proud of you of what you're doing, of going across the country and standing in front of hospitals to get people to wake up. I mean, I just think that that's very, very brave, and I really, really thank you for your work for doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's more than a societal problem. It's a philosophical, it's a spiritual problem.
Absolutely.
That so many people have had the light of reason taken from their minds, right? And then this is the thing, is reason eventually leads the mind to think about things that are greater than the body that people occupy in the material world, right? And that's what makes people have a connection to the spiritual, a connection to that which is greater than them. And then to have that removed, then all of a sudden, you know, people lose their humanity. They just lose their humanity. They just become obedient robots and they follow instructions, and the death and suffering of their own children doesn't bother them. I mean, how much more could it be possible to lose any more humanity than to, you know, watch a pregnancy that a mother's carried for 8 months all of a sudden die? It's just unbelievable, and how that's not waking people up. It's like humanity has been removed from the consciousness. And that's incredibly, it was incredibly awful.
It is incredibly awful. Well, in the last couple of minutes that we have here this morning, Dr. Nagase, what would you like to close out with this morning to the people that are going to be listening to this now and in the future? What would you like to say to this audience?
You know, I think everyone who's woken up, seeing the truth about the world around them, please take care of yourselves, prepare, try and wake up as many people as possible. But most importantly, get in touch with your inner self, get in touch with your higher self, and do everything you can to prepare for what's coming. Because the people that would do this to other human beings, they're not the types of people that will stop just because you ask them to.
Wow, that's really profound. Thank you so much for your work. Thank you so much for your heart and your caring. Thank you for standing in the gap. It's very difficult. I mean, they've taken away your livelihood. Do you have a website or someplace where we can follow you or support you? Are you having is there a fundraising effort, anything that we can get behind to support you?
You know, I don't have a website. I've just been so busy going out, speaking, just going out into the community. You know, I think there's a few people in Vancouver that regularly post my videos, and then but then, you know, I'm over in the interior, which is a completely different area. And I'm just in so many different places all the time that I really haven't had a chance to collect anything together. But at some point, I probably should.
All right. Well, we'll do our best to promote your videos and anything that you need to get out there, that there's, you know, things that you're talking about that you want us to post them on our channels, because we've got a pretty big audience and it's growing. So I want to thank you so much again for all the work that you're doing. And thank you for getting up this early this morning and doing this. I don't know what happened to our live stream connection, but it will get posted up into the live stream area probably tomorrow. We'll get it because we have to do some post-processing on the Zoom calls. But I want to thank you for everything that you're doing. Thank you for everybody, for all the people that have been here today. So as we close out, I want to say a big thank you to everybody who joins us here at This Week with Dr. T. And be sure to follow what Dr. Daniel's doing across the country and support him, if at the very least, support him in prayer. So thank you so much, everybody, for being here. You can go and find all the things that we do at drtenpenny.com. While you're over there, be sure to sign up for our email list, because it is the one way that we can stay in contact with you. We've got a lot of things posted on Cloud Hub, and we're building our entire premium channel back again that Podbean took down. So with that, I always close out with one of my favorite verses from the Bible, whether it's a pre-recorded or whether it's a live broadcast, which is Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. So until next time, we'll see you again next week. Dr. Nagase, thank you so much for being here. God bless you, and Godspeed, and take care of you while you're out there sharing the truth with everybody. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Tenpenny.